There's a great deal more to be said about it, and we're going to say a great deal more about it. But the main thing is this. Try to get thoroughly accustomed to this way of thinking. You have to put yourself in the position of a medieval reader when attempting to understand medieval literature. This way of thinking is pre-scientific. It was eventually demolished by the Galilean or Copernican theory of heliocentrism. But it's also authoritarian and scientific. It's not mainly a result of primitivity or ignorance, but a result of the desire to justify elitist ideas of inequality, hierarchy, authority, wealth, and poverty. Of course, it wasn't perceived by most people that that was its purpose. This is why it's so powerful in Christianity today, for example. Why societies full of inequality and exploitation still use religion as a means of social control, even though any pretense for a scientific basis for this way of thinking disappeared almost 500 years ago. Well, just jump back for a minute before we go to the last hierarchy to our first handout, the medieval social hierarchy imagined and real, and look again at this section that's entitled From Analogy to Allegory. I've already pointed out that caritas is to cupiditas, as reason is to the flesh, as man is to woman, as the king to his kingdom, as Adam is to Eve, as God to his created universe. That's the system of hierarchies presented in the second handout. Logically, this is not far from having one hierarchy stand in for or represent another. Since all hierarchies are analogous to one another, that is to say, they all are supposed to reflect the divine hierarchy of the created universe, God's will, it's easy to see how the heir to the throne of France could be called the dolphin, right? King among men, king among fish. So if you depict a dolphin in a poem, it could be made to represent the heir to the throne. A poem about a society of fish, or in the case of Chaucer, a society of birds, in the Parliament of Foolers or Fowls. A poem about the society of fish could be understood as a poem about human society rather than about fish. Similarly, all hierarchies are analogous to that of Adam and Eve. Notice on the second handout, the created universe understood by analogy, how Adam or man and Eve or woman are analogous to reason, the rational part of the human soul, and the flesh, the sensual part of the human soul, are also analogous to husband and wife, God and the created universe, and so forth. Now, the overturning of any hierarchy, the upsetting of any order, could be seen as recapitulating or repeating or reiterating in the present, the original sin of Eve's yielding to the serpent and seducing Adam to disobey God by eating the tree of the fruit of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Since all sin is love of core flesh, that is, cupiditas, or an abandonment of reason, therefore all sin could be viewed as adultery, which of course is love according to the flesh in a very literal sense. Therefore, in medieval literature, it's common to see any kind of sin discussed in terms of adultery, that is, as a form of irrational love, love lacking reason, irrational love, or love according to the flesh, or love not sanctioned by God. All sins could be and were viewed as perverted love, love of money, avarice, love of food, gluttony, love of your neighbor's wife, lechery, love of one's physical self, pride, vainglory, and so on. And similarly, adultery, a very literal form of perverted love, from the Latin perverto, to turn away from the proper direction, that is, in this case, away from the divinely sanctioned path, could be a figure. Adultery could be a figure, a representation, whether verbally or pictorially, of any kind of sin, since all sin is love of something that should not be loved. As we will see in the pages from St. Augustine's book on Christian doctrine, which I will talk to you about later on. Okay, we're nearing the end of this introductory lecture, and I know it's quite a bit to digest. But before going, I just want to ask you to take a look at this diagram called the geocentric or Ptolemaic notion of the universe, because I want to show how it relates to what I've gone before, and also introduce a few new ideas. The system of explaining the apparent motion of the moon, sun, planets, and stars around the Earth, the apparent motion around the Earth, right, which is called the geocentric theory of the universe, was current until overturned by the Galilean or Parnassian heliocentric or sun-centric theory of the universe in the 17th century, although the Roman Catholic Church did not officially abandon the geocentric theory until the beginning of the 19th century. This geocentric theory, which was the theory that was held by learned people in the Middle Ages for the most part, is a system that imagines the heavenly bodies rotating in each in its own sphere and the whole system around the Earth. Their apparent motion, as seen from the Earth, could be accounted for by assuming very complex rates and angles of rotation from each sphere. In fact, some complex machines meant to represent all this from the late medieval or early Renaissance period still survive. I've seen one, I saw one years ago at Smith College Library, for example. This system could be made to work given the relatively primitive naked eye level of exactitude of observation that was all that was possible in the Middle Ages, but its real purpose was not scientific, but ideological. It was only secondarily a reflection of systematic observation. The real purpose of this geocentric theory was to demonstrate that the structure of the observable universe conformed to the hierarchical system which elite medieval thinkers imposed on the natural and social world on Earth, and so to reinforce authoritarianism. In addition, it had to conform to the account of creation in Genesis, so that the supposed infallibility of the Bible as the Word of God could be confirmed. These ideological purposes were far more important than explaining observable phenomena, as the condemnation of Galileo later showed, and as, by the way, those people who still claim biblical infallibility prove by still asserting the system, even though there's not a shred of any kind of scientific evidence for its ideological authoritarianism that they're really interested in. Take a look at the diagram. You'll see all of the different spheres depicted as they were imagined, but I want to pay particular attention to the sphere between the moon and the Earth, called the sublunary sphere, or the sphere underneath the Earth, the moon, the area within the moon's sphere. As the moon was the only heavenly body that appeared to change in its waxing and waning, it was taken as a sign of the mortality which entered the Earth as a result of the fall of man due to original sin, the sin of Adam and Eve, according to the account in Genesis, right? The sin of Adam and Eve caused God to condemn mankind to die and to suffer during life. Similarly, even the mountains, valleys, and other irregular earth were interpreted as imperfections or deviations from the original perfect creation. It was assumed, of course, that the Earth, like the rest of the universe, must have originally been perfectly spherical, since the sphere is a perfect shape and God the perfect being. This conception of the universe is also a hierarchy, therefore, but in reverse. Just imagine that you have this, instead of being a sphere, that you take a sort of center cut of it, like the center slice for an onion, and so that it's flat, two-dimensional, and then you cut it like a pie, you'll end up with a roughly triangular pie-shaped piece. You can make this analogous to the other triangles, which represent other hierarchies. The only difference is you'd have to invert it. The Earth is the least noble part, even though it would be the apex of your piece of pie, right? The Earth is the least noble, and the empyrean, the edge of the pie would be the most noble. In fact, the Earth is both the most and the least noble, right? The pinnacle of the divine creative plan, right? The purpose that God had to creating the universe was to create the Earth, but the least noble because marred by original sin, and thereby bereft of its pristine perfection. Before leaving this diagram, therefore, I want to stress, you know, how this it fits into the whole overall system of analogies. And you can imagine this pie slice, if you want, if it helps you to fit it into a system of analogies. I also want to introduce the idea of fortune. As the site of original sin, the earth, that is the sublunary sphere including the earth, is ruled by fortune, mortality or death, and mutability or change, which is a foreshadowing of death aspect of it. We're going to take a look at some passages from Boethius' Consolation of Philosophy, which will introduce us to the doctrine of fortune. But for now, please review this material and make sure you have these concepts of the system of analogies between the different hierarchies, that you become familiar with that, because this is very fundamental to what we'll be doing the rest of the semester. Thank you.